Welcome back to Roaming with Restless Women. Today I have Michelle Locke with one L, same as my
That's correct.
sister. Same as my sister, by the way.
I like
On
that.
yeah, we have something in common already. There we go, Michelle. Michelle Locke is a former associate family court judge and seasoned family law attorney with a remarkable career that spans both the bench and private practice. Michelle brings unparalleled knowledge in handling some of the most complex and emotionally charged cases in family law. That takes a special person. I don't know that I could do that. From presiding over a specialized domestic violence court to representing clients in high-stakes custody battles, Michelle's commitment to justice and the well-being of families shines through. Her personal experiences and professional dedication make her a unique and empathetic advocate in the field. Today, we're going to hear about her journey, her insights, and the profound impact she continues to make in family law today. So, welcome, Michelle. I'm so glad you could be with us.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate this opportunity.
I know how hard it is to get time with lawyers, so I'm thrilled. Thank you very much. And between the two of us, we had to reschedule a couple of times. So I'm
We
very
did.
thankful for your time.
We did. I think both of our calendars got a little messy there for a minute.
Oh man, I'm telling you. So the first thing that I wanted to ask you is what drew you to law in the first place? And then secondly, why did you focus on family law?
So this is going to sound silly, but when I was somewhere around 8 or 9 years old, I forget which age specifically, but it was after my parents got divorced. My dad, who was a surgeon, told me if I ever became a lawyer, he'd disown me. And I was like, done. I'm just going to be a lawyer. And I've really never deviated from that. I've wanted to be a lawyer probably as long as I can remember. It seemed to be a calling for me. Like the thought of being in a courtroom, I couldn't imagine doing anything else.
Well, how did you get exposed to the law profession?
You know, the funny thing is, I don't know that I did. I mean, when I grew up when I was a kid, it was all doctors. I mean, because all of our, where I lived in West Texas, they couldn't get doctors. So they imported at the time, this was late 70s, about 17 Canadian doctors specifically that all came down. And so that was the group that I grew up around. And so I don't know that I ever was around lawyers, like really in my young age. As I got a little older, 15, 16, I was, but I don't know what it was. It's just the idea of arguing for a living, even at 8 years old, was really something that sounded like fun to me.
Oh, you must have
My
been
poor
great in
parents.
debate club or something.
Well, and I did debate. I did debate all through high school. I was the president of speech and drama. Oh, yeah. I mean, I totally went down that path. Mock trial, or I did mock trial in high school. Oh, yeah. Anything was law related, I did.
That's great. I
Yeah.
took a one semester constitutional law class, and the professor said, you might want to go back to English literature. Because all I kept saying was, that's not fair,
Oh, yeah. Well, so I have a saying that I tell a lot of my clients. I'm like, there's lots of four-letter words in divorce, but fair is not one of them.
No, it's not. And
It's
I
not.
too experienced the divorce of my parents at an early age, so I get it.
Yeah, it's not
So
fair.
what do you think is the most important aspect of your career? What is the thing that weaves throughout your entire career journey? Could be values, it could be some sort of passion or.
It's two things. Really, one of the items is that kids are always my priority in what I do, because the kids didn't get asked to get brought into a situation of divorce. They didn't ask to get invited into a party where their parents don't get along and are ugly to each other. They didn't ask for any of it. And I think it's paramount that we put the kids first. And I make that very clear with my clients from the start. I'm not going to do anything that's going to be, even if you ask me to, anything that's going to harm your children. It's not appropriate. I'm not going to do it. And I don't. So that's really one of the themes. I mean, I grew up hating going back and forth between my parents' houses And so even today, in what when I do the custody agreements for my clients in mediation, I really try to come up with ways that that the children get to avoid seeing the conflict, because it's never good for the kids to see it. You want to keep their childhood as enjoyable and memorable as possible, as opposed to them being on a therapist's couch down the road talking about the horror of exchanges between parents. That's the first theme that runs through my practice and always has run through my practice. The second part is my second theme is that good dads should get to be good dads. And what I
Yes.
mean by that is that children benefit from both parents if both parents are capable of being good parents. There are lots of times where you've got one parent that is not a good parent, that could be male or female. But good parents deserve to parent their children. And I think that the schedule in Texas, the standard schedule that lots of dads get, although we're attorneys that have been doing it like I've been doing it for a long time, we usually come up with custom schedules. But I don't think the Texas standard schedule takes into consideration good dads. And that's what I think. I think back in the old days when my dad was, when I was growing up, dads went to work, mom stayed home. That was very the traditional role that my parents had in the 70s and 80s. I think the younger generation now, I guess millennials are the ones having kids now. I don't even really know that for sure. But there's lots of dads that are heavily involved, and it seems horrific to reduce what was their, really large influence in their kids' lives day in and day out to only 43% of the kids' lives. Like, I just, good dads get to be good dads, and they should get to be good dads. Kind of, so those are the two real main themes that run through my practice pretty consistently.
And that I 100% agree with that. There's actually, I live in Orlando,
Oh,
but we
well, next time I'm
travel.
there, I'll come see you.
Okay, sounds good.
I'm there a lot. I like Orlando.
Okay, so we do too. My two daughters live down here, so that's where we winter. We're getting ready to head out and go out back out on the road for the winter time or the summertime, but.
Yeah, that I don't blame you.
Yeah, it's already 90 here today, so
Yeah, it's 90 here, I think, tomorrow as well. I'm just like, no, I'm not ready for this yet.
yeah, me either. Me either. But I think it's important, there are some there's a law firm here that's called the Dad's Divorce Firm or something like that. Anyway, what they specialize in is representing the fathers in divorce proceedings. And so, and I think that's when I look around and I look at my nephews and how they interact with their children, I couldn't imagine them not being a part of their child's life. It's a little different
Well,
when my
I
parents
agree.
got divorced.
Right.
My
It was
dad
different when my
basically
parents got
left.
divorced. Yeah. That's exactly what my dad did. There wasn't even a discussion of dad's going to stay home with the kids. That wasn't even a
Oh,
discussion
no.
back then.
No, and even in my divorce, my kids were 13 and 16. So luckily they had the choice,
They have an input.
if they wanted, if they want. And really and truly, we were very amicable and there was no problems. But I can see where, you are going to want to have both parents. If they are good parents, to be a part of that child's life and in as easy a way as possible. So, thank you for doing that
Right, it is.
work. It
I
makes a
mean, it
huge
is.
difference. So, one of the topics that you talk about is advocating for yourself when no one else does. Can you talk to me a little bit about that? Because I would imagine you put children in that category as well.
You do. Some of that really relates to self-care, and it's self-care and taking care of yourself is not selfish. It's necessary for you to be the best parent you can be, because you can't, and it sounds so cliche, you can't pour from an empty cup. But I know the health journey that I've been on the last 5, 6 years now since COVID, so 5 years. And I think I'm now up to like 15 surgeries in those 5 years,
Oh
of
my
those like
goodness.
seven serious, other ones minor. But it's
Oh.
because I didn't put myself first, and I didn't take the self-care that I needed to. And that applies in regards to parenting, because we as women, how I grew up, and I was born in the 70s, but it was to get an education, have a career, be a mom, be a wife, raise the family, do all those things. And none of those things mention taking care of yourself. None of those things. And that should be first, because if you want to stick around and take care of your kids, you got to take care of yourself. And nowhere in that list of shit I was supposed to do was the, oh, take care of yourself. It just wasn't. And so I encountered a bunch of health problems because I'd ignored myself for so long. And I looked back and thought, I would schedule all my husband's appointments. He's my ex-husband now, but scheduled all of his medical appointments, scheduled all my kids' medical appointments, scheduled all my stepkids' medical appointments. And you know how many medical appointments someone scheduled for me? And there's something wrong with that. If you're doing it for everyone else and not for yourself, that is not a long-term healthy solution to anything.
That
And
is
so really,
correct.
that's when you talk about self-care, and for me, it's just not selfish. It is a must that you must do. Otherwise, you won't be around to take care of your kids. And having kids and being involved in, especially when you get divorced, is you want them to have good memories, right? You don't want to ruin their childhood because their parents couldn't get along. And some of that is about self-care, because in the divorce, most people should be getting some mental health treatment during a divorce.
I would
They
agree.
say the most difficult things in life you go through are death, divorce, and taxes. And it couldn't be truer for divorce. And even when I went through my own, it was difficult. And you break down because where did I go wrong? It's not what you planned for when you got married. You thought it was the happily ever after. You feel like a failure. You can. You have shame. It's so many things wrapped up into one, and you feel like you failed your children. And that you've got to, at some point, find some mental health treatment during the process to help you get through. Not because anything's wrong with you, but sometimes it's really okay to say you're not okay. And divorce is the perfect
100%.
time to do it.
And it should be both of you,
Oh,
frankly,
absolutely. It's not just one side
and
that needs it.
that's exactly right. And sometimes even the children, depending on the situation.
Correct.
But I know that I had already been seeing a therapist for clinical depression. So when I went through the divorce, because I had been through that, and I knew what it actually feels like to be depressed, or what it doesn't feel like to be depressed. I knew I needed to go and just get myself taken care of during the process, because otherwise I would have done what we were raised to do, just take care of everything.
Yep.
And
Oh,
that is
yeah.
very stressful to do that.
And I will tell clients, I say, because, they're like, well, if I get on medication and go see a therapist, they're going to use that against me in the custody case. And I usually venture to tell them, they may use it against you that you're not going. Like, and it's okay to get a prescription for Zoloft or some antidepressant or some kind of anti-anxiety meds if your doctor prescribes it. Like, that's not a negative. That's a positive, because you are ensuring that you are taking care of your mental health because you need it and your kids need it for you to be the good parent that you are, male or female. I mean, this applies to both. And
Absolutely.
divorce sucks. Like, there's no good part to it. I mean, I wish there was, but there's just not. So really, you got to take care of your mental health. And it's okay. Friends, are you doing okay? Are you doing okay? And everyone's like, oh yeah, I'm fine. When you're not fine, stop saying that. I'm sure most friends would, what can I do to help? Because you're not fine. I hate to break it to you, you're not fine. And so admit it. You can't get over the not being not fine until you actually like let those tears fall.
It's a going through situation. It's one of
And
those I
you
have to
will
go through
come
it.
out the other side okay. You will. But feel all those feelings. Get process them, get through them, and move on to the other side, but you can't avoid them. They will catch up with you at some point, somewhere, so you might as well deal with them while you're going through it.
Exactly right. The interesting thing about getting therapy while you're going through it is that it doesn't build up,
Right.
you know. And I find it very freeing, at least since COVID, when a lot of the workplace norms really got put on their heads. It's way more okay now to talk about your mental health and to talk about getting help than it was even before COVID. But I think COVID and the newer generation in the workforce really broke that out
Oh,
and
absolutely.
made it front and center. Hope it stays that
Oh, I hope so too.
Yeah.
You never know. You never know.
Yep. So you also have, you are also a person in a male-dominated career, less so than probably even 12 years ago. But tell me a little bit about how you navigated that when you first got involved with the male-dominated career.
Oh, and my how I dealt with it is probably going to shock most people, but I got advice when I was 15 years old from a very successful male attorney. I mean, very, very successful. And he told me, he said, never forget you're a woman and don't try to be a man in a man's world. He's like, you be you. And I, honest to God, I took that advice 100%. I dress very feminine. My hair is always done. My nails are always done. My makeup's always done. Usually I wear bright red lipstick to court. But I very much embrace my femininity. And I have never hidden behind it or tried to be a man. That is not my role. I try to be my authentic self. But really, I worked hard. I pounded the pavement. I took risks. I put my head on the proverbial chopping block. I did the hard things to get to where I am. And while I encountered various inappropriate comments, actions, behaviors, I didn't make a stink about them. I chose to ignore them and push through. Because once you get into the system, it's easier to break down those barriers. But you got to figure out a way to get in first. And so I found a way in, but it was by embracing who I am. Like, I have breasts. I mean, lipstick. I've carried three children. I mean, I remember being in court on all three of my kids until the day before I gave birth.
So you are tough, however, but that's authentically you that you're
That was
tough.
authentically me. That's
There
authentic. But
you
I
go.
have. I it's my. Stepdad always called me a bull in a china shop, which is unfortunately true. But I'm also on the inside a big softy that I don't most people do not get to see, and I'm all right with that. The
Yeah.
few close ones get to see it, but very tough, you're not going to tell me what I can't do, and just because I'm a woman doesn't mean you can stop me. But I've
Absolutely.
also, and I mean this, I've never really stood with the or not. I've never had to say, I'm a woman, give me a chance. I've never looked at my gender as anything other than that's who I am, but I'm just gonna keep going forward. And so I never, it was never, I'm a woman, give me this. It was, I'm just gonna do it. And I did it.
Yeah. And there's and but in most situations, when you say you have to get into the system, that's the hard part because you have to get into it, being authentically yourself and perhaps working a little harder to get that respect. But once you get it, you got it.
Once you get it, you've got it. But the problem is getting it, and it is a
Yeah.
challenge.
Very challenging.
It was very challenging. I remember starting over when I left the bench and moved out to Central Texas. I had to start over again, all over again, proving myself. And it's not easy, but I did it. And so
Yeah.
I just remember the first few times attorneys would give me terrible offers because I guess they thought that I couldn't go try a case. I'd be like, well, let's go to court. And they found out otherwise.
There you go. So, what advice do you give women who are now coming up and who are getting ready to go into male-dominated careers?
Really, kind of a little bit of what I did is just be yourself. I'm a believer in just showing what I can do. Like, I'm not going to tell you what I can do, I'm just going to go do it. And then you're gonna have a hard time denying that I can do it. I mean, really, you put your nose to the grind and you grind away because if you are talented, if you are smart, if you're really good at your job, I do believe that comes through. And
Yes.
if you're in a place where it doesn't, then change.
Yeah.
Right? Not all things you can change. But I've been very fortunate that I have all male partners. There's five of us, and I'm the only female partner. And that's not because of any reason for them, but I'm the only one that probably demanded my spot at the table and said, "Hey guys, I'm here." Value your worth. Stop worrying about what everyone else thinks.
Yes,
Follow
that's
your
a
own.
big
Oh,
one.
that's a big one. That's a big one because not everyone in life is going to like you. And if you're good at what you do, there's going to be even more people that don't like you. And people don't like you when you're the one willing to put your head on the chopping block because you have the guts and the gumption to go do it. You will have a long list of haters. And I guess what? They don't pay your bills.
That's true. And they're not part of your self-care routine either.
Correct. And you know, my list of haters increases exponentially with every case I try. You know, I cross-examine you. You typically don't like me afterwards, but don't live your life to please others. Don't live your life by a popularity contest. None of it matters. What matters is the legacy you leave behind, the memories of people that you love, that you leave them with those memories. It's those things. It's not a car. It's not the fancy house you live in by the country club. It's the memories that you leave people with or the people that you helped. I mean, there are some cases where I know that I've changed, I've helped change. I'm not solely responsible for it, but I've helped change the course of a family and in some cases help save a child. And that creates a different dynamic for that family for generations to come. And so I take it as a very important role, but it's not about the stuff. It's not about the popularity contest. It's not about that. It's about being authentically you and doing something for a purpose that makes you happy and helps others along the way.
So let me ask you this that I was curious about when I went through your resume. What did you like better, being a judge or an attorney?
So I get asked that question a fair amount, and I'll tell you this. I love both. Both are very, very different roles. Being a judge is a very lonely gig. You are very much isolated. And I don't think most people realize that until they become a full-time judge, just how isolating being one is. And you can't really have an opinion on anything. And you can't support any political candidates. Like you're really limited in what you can do. But you also get to have the impact on shaping people's lives. And there are some hard calls that you have to make as a judge. There are cases even I have now going, man, I'm glad I'm not the judge on this case. Because those calls are tough to make at times because you're like, what if I get it wrong? On the flip side, I miss cross-examination. I miss being in the courtroom because for me, there's no bigger high in this world than a good cross-examination, which makes me a nerd. I understand that. But I love, love, love cross-examination. You can't do that from the bench. So though they had pluses and minuses, and I am fortunate enough that I get to do both still. Like I'm still a judge, but I'm a municipal court judge for one of the outside cities that I'm from in Central Texas.
Oh,
And
that's
I,
good.
right. So I'm still a judge in one way or another, but I really love both roles. I really do. They both are very different. But I get to help in different ways with both. So listen, I'm really fortunate in my career. I really am. I have the best of all worlds.
That's wonderful. Well, you deserve it.
Some may
There
disagree
you
with
go.
you.
Hey, self-care, lady, self-care.
That's right. That's right. So you just don't care about the haters, but oh, I have some. I'm very fortunate. I'm very fortunate. And so now, you strive, strive, strive in your life, and you really work to get ahead. And then at some point, I've had to stop and say, I gotta take care of myself. And I'm very much in the taking care of myself phase. Like I'm right now 2 weeks out from another cervical fusion. Like I had probably
Oh
3 weeks tomorrow that I'm
my
out from surgery. Right? You wouldn't tell by looking at me, but if you look at the back of my neck,
No.
see a long incision. But yeah, self-care is really a priority for me right now.
And so when you say self-care, give me some examples of what you do, both, in both big and small.
Well, I mean, part of it's going for your regular appointments. It's going for your mammogram. It's going for your colonoscopy. It's going to the dentist. It's some of it is that. I'm not gonna lie. It's like I'm looking at my ooh, I gotta schedule my annual with my gynecologist. I'm like, ugh. Like mammograms terrify me. The very first mammogram I had at 40, they found a spot and I had
Oh
to have a
my goodness.
lumpectomy. And I had a 2-year-old. Oh, it was the most like scarring event. Fortunately, knock on wood, it was not cancer, but so they did a lumpectomy anyways. But part of my self-care routine is that. The other part of it, believe it or not, is I love doing these podcasts. Like this is one of the best parts of my day is getting to do this. So this is part of my self-care routine is I truly love this.
I
But
do
then the other part
too.
of it, no, I mean really, I do. I love it. I'm a constant, I get a pedicure and manicure every 2 weeks, like clockwork. That is absolutely my me time. But I don't know, I'm not really big on massages or those things. It's just like time to go to the gym. It's time to take a nap on your couch and watch whatever, like my 600-pound life, which is what I'm on the kick of watching right now. But it's finding things you love. Like I love stand-up comedy. So I see who's coming to town, and if it's a funny show, I'll go. I mean, I love stand-up comedy.
I do
But it's,
too.
I want to go laugh. I want to go see a stupid movie. I deal with serious stuff every day. I don't want to see serious on the weekends. I just don't.
I'm the same as you. We could talk forever about stand-up
We
comedy, I'm
could.
quite
We
sure.
could. Oh, I don't have any
So
doubt.
you also talk about the importance of mentorship for up and comers. So tell me a little bit about your mentor or how you're mentoring others, that sort of thing.
So I would say, unfortunate enough that I did not have a mentor. I learned by the school of hard knocks. I really did. That is not a method that I would like anyone to learn from because boy, is it rough and it leaves you with some scars. And so I have young attorneys that work for me. We have four right now and all female. And it's really telling them how to try cases, how to be their authentic selves. I'm very much a believer in you go be a woman in that courtroom, that you go be, you develop your style. You cannot imitate anyone else's style because their style is unique to them and it works for them and it may not work for you. And so if I could shortcut their learning process to like half of what I had the school of hard knocks, then it's a win. Because that school of hard knocks sucks. You
Oh,
learn
it
a lot from
does.
it. You learn a lot from it, but it's, if I can help someone avoid it, I will.
One thing that I have been interested in is a concept of reverse mentoring. So, for those of us who are of an age, I'm about 10 years older than you at this point. For those of us of an age, I find that I get a little nervous when I need to learn something that I know I could have learned in 30 minutes 10, 20 years ago, because I had more of an interest, more of a reason to learn it. Since I started my business 5 years ago, I've had to become my own IT department, my own accounting department, et cetera. And so I started looking at this concept called reverse mentoring. And companies are actually partnering, and I've done this too in my practice, partnering, the Gen Z and millennial folks with the boomers and Xers. And it's kind of a reverse mentoring. So for things that it requires a lot of trust and put your ego at the door when you walk in, old person, that kind of a thing. But what I found is that the situations when I can appropriately set that relationship up and kind of give them some ground rules with each other, it works wonders, wonders, because the older person many times is uncomfortable asking. They don't want to be obsolete, they don't want to be seen as less than. And so we switch it. And that way, the younger person also sees that the older person, even though they went through, 10 or 20 years of a different kind of career than it is now, they still have the basics and they still can tell you about basic human behavior. And hey, you might want to look out for this risk or this thing that happens, et cetera. So I find that it works so great when you can do that. And so I'm glad that you had mentorship on your list. Because I'm very interested in helping, obviously, younger women in particular move ahead in their careers.
Well, I think it's important that, you help lead the next generation. Like we can't, I can't, you can lead a horse to water, can't make them drink, right? But I think you can lead them in the right direction where you teach them like these are the morals and the ethics that you should follow in this career. Here's why. I mean, it's yeah, it's important for the next generation to know. I don't know where I would be today in my career if I had a mentor. And so I don't, I mean, I don't, but maybe I'd be farther ahead, but I think I'm doing okay for being 23 years into this practice. But I think it's important for the younger girls. I want them to own who they are, be proud of who they are, and make who they are the most powerful person in their respective area of work. I mean, because most of them have the brains and the drive to do it. They just have to get the gumption to go do it.
Exactly. And for me, when I started my career in the 90s, I was competing not only against men, but also other women, because that's how it was done. There's no need for that anymore, necessarily. You still run across, the mean girls occasionally. However, you get farther when you collaborate. And that's something that I've learned from just working with the younger generations in my projects. It's much more
Listen,
fulfilling.
I learn a lot of like shortcuts on Word and Excel.
I learned how to do this whole podcast thing for one of my assistants.
Listen, I'm having to figure out AI. Like I'm trying to figure out AI and everything else right now, because if I have figured out that if our generation doesn't figure it out, we're gonna be left behind.
Oh yeah, I'm in the midst of it right now. I use it a lot.
Oh,
Use
I'm
it
trying to use
a
it every
lot.
day. Every day, I'm trying to use it, because
Yes.
if we don't figure it out, we're going to become obsolete.
Like in 2 minutes.
I
Yeah.
know. And I was like, I'm going to
It's
keep using it.
crazy. Well, I've got three questions that I ask at the end of every interview. They're easy. But the first one requires that you close your eyes just for a moment.
See how trusting I am? I just closed my eyes.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Okay, here we go. So I want you to describe what you see in your mind when I say wise woman, and then open your eyes and describe her.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg. That's how I would describe her. I don't think there's anything else that needs to be said other than that.
RBG, gotta love her.
That's a wise woman, or I was a wise woman, but that's.
Yes, she was. I loved her life story. I was
Oh
able to go
no.
back and it's amazing. Just freaking amazing.
Think the only one I would say that comes to mind would be Ann Richards from Texas, though. She was
Yes.
governor, right? She'd be the other wise woman.
Yeah, that's a good one too. All right. So, second to last question. Where do you like to roam?
Anywhere where there's water, and particularly salt water.
Okay, so you're a beach gal.
I like the beach. Not necessarily swim in it, but
Right.
I like my feet in the sand and in the surf.
Yeah, me too.
But I don't like sharks.
No,
Yeah, so I'll
no.
stay in the shallow waters.
And my final question is, what makes you restless in a good way? I have a feeling you're always restless.
Yeah, I was gonna say the better question would be what doesn't make me restless? I don't sit well. Like the whole doing nothing, I can't do. I overbook every vacation. I overplan every vacation. That my biggest challenge is not being restless. It really is.
Yeah.
I go 1,000 miles an hour about every day, and if I don't, I'm bored, and then destructive habits happen, and I'm like, nope, it's just better to keep me busy.
Yeah, there we go. Well, I love that answer because we have a lot of people like that in the world, and they think that, there's something wrong with them sometimes because they can't relax, but that's not true. You can relax while you're busy if you're
You
doing something
can.
that you love.
Right. Sometimes being hyper focused on your work is relaxing.
It very much is for me sometimes, that's for sure.
So that's when I don't have the phone ringing. So long as, like, if I have like 4 hours where clients can't get a hold of me, my paralegal can't, like, the phones are down, it's like, oh, this is what peace is like. Yeah. I was like, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I like it.
Without interruptions would be nice.
Yeah. Well, Michelle, it has been such a pleasure.
Thank you for
So
having me.
fun talking with you. And I'm glad you like doing these podcasts because
Oh, I do. I
we love
do.
having you.
It's the highlight of my day, getting to talk and it not being in a courtroom fighting with the judge. Oh, no, this is so much better. This is so much more relaxing. Like, people don't realize, litigators, lawyers in particular, litigation lawyers, all we do is fight and argue all day long. So it's
Oh,
really nice to sit and just have a conversation.
yeah.
Yeah,
Well,
it's
thank you
quite
for
nice.
having your conversation with me. Where can people get a hold of you if they want to ask you some questions?
Oh, the easiest is my website, michellelock.com. I'm also on Instagram as Attorney Michelle Locke and LinkedIn under my name as well. If you need to email me, you can always email me at hello@michellelock.com. The only thing I will tell you is just remember, Michelle's with one L.
Yeah, exactly. I'll make sure that's correct in the show notes.
Thank
And I
you.
really appreciate your jumping on with us today. Thank
Well,
you so
thank you.
much.
I hope you have a great rest of your afternoon.
You too.